It's Wednesday, February 24th, 2010, and you're listening to episode 182 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
And this is Chris.
So I learned something this past week. Actually, I learned something today.
The Fear the Con has t-shirts? Oh, did you see that nice segue? That was smooth.
No, that was a derailment.
No, I think you skipped ahead at least one or two items on his list. I've thrown us off completely. Show's over, guys.
I'm a well-oiled machine.
No, hold on, Chad. We'll get back to that.
I'm completely off the episode rails.
What? You're well-oiled?
I am a well-oiled machine.
Okay, keep going with that visual. I've got it.
Machine.
Yes, you're definitely a machine.
Machine.
Pistons, you know.
All right, yeah, I got you. So, Fear the Con 3... coming up here in less than a month. If you've not gone out to fearthecon.com and signed up for this, get in there. Probably about the time this episode drops, maybe even right before this episode drops, I'm going to release the last few of the games that I'm going to be running. There are still folks opening up episodes. There are still people coming in and joining. Get out there, fearthecon.com. Get signed up. We want to see you at the Wing Night. We want to see you at the con. And if you can stick around, we want to see you for some of the things that we're going to do over the couple days after the convention. Now, as Chad mentioned,
yes,
the mighty Keith Curtis has put together for us a con mascot, I suppose. Well, at least for Fear the Con 3.
Yeah.
Will he be
more
back
of
next
an
year?
Avatar. He's a nameless wonder.
Not just nameless. He actually looks homeless to me.
You need to see him up close.
Like, for example, if there was a homeless man who perhaps was also a miner.
How many homeless men have swords?
But
a homeless miner.
If you're a miner who roleplays, you're worried about kobolds, you have a sword. It makes total sense to me. But imagine if he's homeless and he goes out and he's a miner as well. And he mines all the time and he makes mining money. And then he comes to Fear the Con and spends it all.
That shirt is the Easter egg shirt. Keith and I,
there is a lot of stuff.
Major credit to Keith. He's the one who thought up most of this stuff. What we did is he put in all kind of little Easter eggs in there, all kind of references from the show, but also from just general geekdom, all within the image.
Yeah, because the guy's wearing and carrying a lot of stuff. But anyways, if you want to pick up a Fear the Con shirt, whether you're coming to the con or not, we are not going to be selling them at the con this year. We tried it last year and just found out the hard way. We just don't have the infrastructure to do it right. So what we're doing instead is we've just put them up on our Cafe Press store. I will link directly to this off the show notes. If you're interested in getting a con shirt, go out to Cafe Press and pick one up before the con.
Or a con tracksuit. That one.
Yeah, I like the fact that there's a lot of different options.
Well, I don't know how much...
You know, I'm the one who likes different color shirts.
You guys
anyway.
Have talked about redoing the Cafe Press store in general, because we've updated our logo since it was originally opened. They've added a lot of new products, like stickers and such that weren't there before. So the Cafe Press store in general is getting a facelift. I don't know.
Probably after the con.
It's a work in progress, but just to let you know it's out there. All right. But
so personally, when I see that picture that Keith Curtis drew, the first thing I think is hearing all of Chris's old stories about going to the con, dirt cheap. I think this was Chris 200 years ago.
Is he camping? Is this homeless guy camping? Because that was about right.
He could be.
Yeah, he's camping. He's got mining equipment. I'm just thinking that symbol is going to be going on a Speedo and on me.
You know what? It could be.
Mm-hmm.
All right. No, this leads right into the topic I was trying to lead the show off with, which is I learned something this past week. You see, when you are a newborn babe and you experience life, there are emotions or things that you feel for the first time. And eventually you learn words to associate with them. Hungry, sad, angry.
Bad touch.
Apoplectic.
Schadenfreude. All right. There are these things that you eventually learn. My one that I learned perhaps most recently in life, this was hardly yesterday, but one of the last ones I learned, was exactly what the word malaise means. That general feeling of sickness, like when you're fighting off a cold and someone asks...
I thought it was stuff you put on a sandwich.
And you tell someone, I feel sick, And they're like, well, what are your symptoms? You just say, I just feel a general malaise.
You know, that's how always is a general malaise.
Even though malaise is general. Yeah. It's, I'm not nauseous. I don't have a headache. I don't have a fever. I just feel sick. All right. Well, I learned today there is a new emotion or a new sensation I had not previously been aware of that has now been added to my vocabulary. And you're going to have to go to the show notes and click a link in order to feel this emotion. Because this is not one I can explain. Explaining this to you is like explaining blue to someone who's never seen ever in their life. You just have to click this link to understand it. And that emotion is muscle march. There is a video that has taught me this new emotion of happiness, sadness, and muscle march. And Pat and Chris have been sitting here for the 30 minutes.
Is it the Wii thing you showed me before the show?
Yes, it's a Wii game I showed you before the show. Nice muscle! There's this Wii newsletter that I get maybe about once a week telling me what's coming out on the Wii. And one of them for this week was a game called Muscle March. And someone on our forum, a guy who goes by the name of Uriel, posted a link to the Japanese trailer for the game, and I don't even know how to describe it. But this emotion came back a second time.
It's like a homoerotic Katamari Damacy style. It's great.
With acid, and I don't even know what. This is why it's just...
Namco puts out some great games.
Once again, pretend I've never seen at any point in my life and describe to me the color blue in the same way. Yeah. You just must watch this video, and then you will know what it means to feel muscle march. Pat and Chris then reinforce this new emotion of muscle march. They're texting each other prior to the podcast, and it's going back and forth.
And it's on pause right at the moment. Yeah, I've got the next post.
They're giggling
in my
like
head
little
right
girls,
now.
And so I take Pat's phone to see what the hell they're doing, and they are literotica.
Sexting
each other. What is the proper phrase?
I like literotica better.
Literotica.
Yeah, literotica sounds much like better.
It sounds so much.
Is that a real word? Or did you just make
actually think
a
it
real
is.
Word? Yeah.
I've read Penthouse stories cleaner than what these two are sending to each other.
Where do you think I learned my best material?
All right.
Oh yeah.
So, at the risk of making a segue, that's
the
story...
only thing fruitier than that is the 150 pounds of fruit that are going to be at Fear the Con.
Oh, yeah, yes. This is a terrible segue.
But... Smooth, baby.
Oh, I've got... Oh, the other possible segue was just as bad. So, the two other topics we want to talk about, one is, of course, Fear the Fruit. Zeke says he's up to something like 150 pounds
of fruit.
He
says that... He posted that he just put in an order for 150 pounds of fruit made possible by all of your guys' donations.
I thought he was bringing Pat. A 200-pound fruit with him. I totally read that post wrong.
And then Pat had to go and reweigh himself.
I know. I was like, man, I have lost some weight.
But the point is, great job, guys. I mean, after all the talk we've done about health and stuff, if you want an option to round out your diet at the con, or you just want to make sure you take a good hefty dump, be sure to pick up some of the stuff. And also, we will keep the donation links open. Because remember, you may be like, well, wait a minute, they've got 150 pounds of fruit on order, presuming he's actually able to pull that off. That's surely more than they're going to eat at 2 days of a con. What do you guys need more for? Here's
giving
the thing.
To,
exactly. Yep, as we said before, every single leftover food item we have will go to a women's shelter to provide them,
except for tequila,
with fresh food. Yeah.
And that's really only about a pound of fruit a person over 2 days. That's doable.
So, Pat, go back to sexting.
Okay.
You get me in less trouble that way. But all the stuff that's left over is going to a women's shelter. Okay, I don't think I need to explain what puts a woman in a woman's shelter. So it's going to help these people. Mm-hmm. So there's still a great cause behind it. It is 100% charity, 0% operating cost.
Yep.
So if you're interested in donating to this, then I will post a link at least on this show for Fear of the Fruit, maybe one more time before the con hits, but at least one more time.
If you got a spare buck, kick it in. It's worth it. Healthy gamers and helping out women.
The other topic that we were going to talk about, which was an equally bad transition from the great new sensation of muscle march.
You were gonna transition to dice bags.
Dice bags.
Nice.
So within this group,
you got a big blue one, don't you?
It's more purple.
Oh, is it?
All right.
I'd have that look.
So here's the thing. Now that Crown Royal, I've been told, is doing personalized Crown Royal bags.
Right.
or at least selling the bags separate of the Crown Royal. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to buy the whiskey to get the bag anymore. People start carrying their dice in all kinds of different stuff. I mean, everybody's got their way of carrying their dice. For a while, I carried mine in one that was actually sewn by the wife of a guy in my gaming group, except she didn't do such a good job, and it disintegrated pretty quickly. So now I'm back to my good old dice bag, or in some cases, I just have a little plastic box that the dice came in.
You have an FTB 9000 compliant ChessX plastic box,
I do,
by the way.
And I can't remember where I got it from.
You cannot tell me how you got that.
No, I can't. There are some things I have, I can tell you exactly where they came from. But in 4 years of doing this show, there are other things I own, and I just do not remember where they came
the
from.
The ephemera of Fear the Boot.
But I have
washes up on your shore.
Personalized box of ChessX dice for the Fear the Boot podcast.
Bad Dan.
But here's the point.
Yeah.
What I want to hear from you guys, both you guys on the air and then also our listeners on the forum, if it's something unusual, what do you carry your dice in? Or even if you just have a plain old regular boxer bag, nothing weird, you carry your dice in, what is the strangest die that you own? Now, for me, as I said, it's nothing strange. I carry it in a felt bag. If it's not in a felt bag, it's in a plastic box. If it's not in a plastic box, it's something equally boring. The strangest die I own is I have a weather die.
Yeah.
It's a D6, and you roll, it has like sunny, partly cloudy, raining, tornado.
The best one you had, though, is it, and I don't think it's around anymore. I think the ink rubbed off of it was the face die.
The emotion. Yeah, the expression die.
Expression die.
So if you just wanted to roll, they walk up to random towns guy, what is he feeling right now? And what's funny is a lot of times I wouldn't even go for this die. I'd be like, okay, you guys go up to the color animal inn, and there's a barkeep there. And one of the players goes, how is he feeling? Grab the die and roll it.
Yeah.
And then they'd roll it.
He's
like,
angry at
frothed
you.
Frothed off and pissed off. And it's like, great. So now I've got to come up with a reason why
he's
this guy's frothing
sad.
Mad. So
that was a great die.
What do you guys carry your dice in? What is the strangest die you own?
A leather Don Thomas cigar carrying case. Holds about 4 cigars. And the reason I have that is because I don't like a hard plastic thing like the little ChessX plastic container. Because it's hard and plastic.
And
I don't
sharp
want that
edges
and sharp edge. I don't want that in my pocket. And
I only carry it in a coat. I will not wear it in a pants box. Yeah, you sit down, that thing will slice your leg or worse.
Yeah. And I don't like the dice bag because it's a round object.
Does that make you uncomfortable?
No, no. It doesn't fit in your pocket.
Okay.
I mean, people put them in their pockets, but it doesn't.
That's true.
Fit,
you know,
it bulges. Nothing I carry is a round,
you know,
softball size
in the
object.
Pocket. I want to display it. I don't know what it is.
Well,
about
you,
dice.
Yeah, you parade yours around.
Something about dice that just makes you want to get the strangest dice or the strangest thing to carry. Just to, I don't even know why. I mean, it's not like you're trying to draw attention. It's just like, look at what I got. I have round dice.
Well,
which I do have round dice.
But you know what? That is a good point, that one of the things that's weird about all the dice bags I've seen is none of them are really designed with carrying in mind.
Yeah.
That you've
they
got
carry dice.
They carry the
they
dice.
They hold the dice.
And they've got, you know, you can tie them off or close them up, or in your case, it's a cigar case. Yeah. I mean, you can close
it. It's two shell
and
pieces.
And so it closes right up. But then what do you do with it? I mean, it's not like, I can't think of what it's called, but the pouch that like they were in Scotland.
McIlroy. No, Sporran. McIlroy's the hat. It's a Sporran.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, whatever it's called. I'll take your word for that. I don't know. I looked up at one point because my mom is of Scottish descent, and so I was going to get one for her in the tartan of Clan Boyd, but I don't remember what it was called. But point being,
pretty sure it's a sport.
Right. Well, not that the tartan was directly on the bag, but all you Scotsmen, settle down. You get my meaning.
It's a cock.
I've dishonored the Emerald Isles, by right.
Yes. Again, for the third time in your life.
And yes, I realize that's Ireland. That was the joke. Yes. So anyway, all right, settle down. Put your claymores away. Most of you aren't Scotch anyway. Settle down.
Did you say that most of them aren't Scotch? You're really going to piss them off. Jeez.
Wow. Word, you're
rolling them out now.
Is not, all right, the point being, though, that it's not like those little pouches. There is nothing about a dice.
You're not a real Scotchman.
You're just butterscotch. Yeah, that's all you are.
I'm going to read the most recent installment here.
All right.
I think you'll lose our rating if
you
do
that. It was a good
one.
It's really got me thinking.
Well, I said, all right, we'll unlock it there.
You
and I'll worry.
Whiskey
but
man.
The point being, though, that none of these dice bags are made with carrying in mind.
Right. So
they're not, they don't have like a little phone holster where they can latch onto your belt or some easy way to put it around your waist or whatever. If you don't have a duffel bag or something with you or really deep coat pockets.
Well, a cigar carrying case is perfect for me. It's flat.
It's rectangle. Maybe about 6 inches long by about 2 or 3 inches wide by maybe about an inch thick. That's rough. Yeah. I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but that's a rough estimate of its size. It's rounded on the edges.
Mm-hmm.
It's firm. I mean, it's not like rock hard, but yeah, it's not rigid, firm. But it's like firm. A hardened leather.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that you could real easily slip into any number of pockets or whatnot.
And it's like a, imagine carrying-wise, it's like a hip flask or a cell phone or something like that. Because of its rectangular, flat nature, you can put it in any pocket and it doesn't look like you're really carrying anything.
You know what you've done here? You've inspired me, and this is what I want to do. I want to get the little dice, the little tiny ones, like, you know, most of the ones you see are six-siders. I think they're like 6 millimeter or whatever, real little ones. But they make whole sets of them as well. I've seen those. I want to get a bunch of those, and I'm going to get a silver cigarette case. A real fancy one.
Yeah.
And I'm
going to
put it in
your
there.
Virginia Slims.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I'm going to carry it in a cigarette case.
Yeah,
in the little tiny
All ones. You have to do is get a, and I'm sure they have it, get a velvet-lined one, and it won't even rattle.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I want the opposite of that. I don't want something small, easy to fit in my pocket, because I just forget to take it. If it's not something where I'm used to feeling it in my hand, you know, when I walk out the door, I'll forget it.
I keep mine in my car.
Wayne. It's got to be, it's part of the whole components as you stuff things in your backpack, your books, your character sheet file, you know, whatever the dice bag has got it. For me, it's got to be something that fits in that same size category. Mm-hmm. Just shove it in the bag there.
Well, see, my bag itself is something I carry things in, though. Within my dice bag, I've got the plastic boxes Dan was talking about. I've got two of those that are filled with dice. I have a little felt bag that has two homemade, not my home though, pewter dice. Then I have
wooden dice.
I've got Zombie Flux in there in its own separate bag within. I've got the game La Bomb, which I probably pronounced wrong, also in there.
It's so the bag, boom.
Yeah, the bag itself carries other things for me. I have pens in there. I have a notebook in there that I can write notes and pass.
See, that's another thing, is I can actually stick a mechanical pencil or pen in mine. Because it's long and flat.
I can fit three in mine.
Yeah,
I know.
See, I got you all beat. See, what you're describing is you're a noob gamer. Because you're still just carrying this relatively small little bag of stuff.
Oh, you're freaking dice box.
I have a dedicated game bag.
You have a tackle box.
I have a bag. It's a big duffel bag that's my game bag that all my crap goes in. And then, yes, I've got a tackle box that's 1.5 feet long, 1 foot deep, and then, you know, it's just a typical tackle box, about 2 inches tall. It's full of dice. I mean, as you can attest, it's full of dice.
How many dice would you say? Probably about 75?
Oh, I have no idea. When I get dice, I like the color of the die itself, like the speckle, the particular colors. So I get whole sets of it, and I get multiple sets. Mm-hmm. I like to have at least 2 or 3 20-siders, a handful of 6-siders. I want to have multiple ones of each one, you know, each type of die. Those are just the dice that I like and I'm using now.
You know, Pat,
that's
what
one
I think
thing
of,
full of. I've got bags of dice that I never use anymore at home that never see the light of day.
What I think of every time you sit down and open your dice box, I get this picture of in the movie, every time you see a sniper pull out and piece together the pieces.
That's right.
Basically, you sit there very stern like. You open your plastic box, your hand picking out your dice and setting them down one at a time.
Yep.
How many freaking dice do you
actually
need?
Wayne's right. Nothing. It is a pretty serious ordeal because I don't bring dice to a game because I'm bringing the game notes or a map or, you know, whatever, my game prep stuff. Pat will be like, did you bring dice? If I say no, he'll be like, what color do you want?
Yeah, exactly. I have.
Yeah, I'm like that too, Dan. I've got at least probably about 5 complete sets in my dice bag.
I have at least 6 different sets, and then I've also got like just 2 or 3 compartments full of nothing but 6-siders.
You have dice
in your box
that you are not allowed to roll on the table because they're
do,
so big and heavy they'll dip the table.
Well, they're the metal ones I bought at Gen Con.
Even
I've
got that in my bag.
I have a whole
I've
section full
huge
of mechanical pencils. I've got 5 right. mechanical pencils.
So
I've got erasers. I've got Post-it notes. I've got everything. It's a tackle box for gaming.
So
it's the game box.
Here's my
And rant. I also have a chainmail dice bag that I got way long ago. I literally, when they
Do you
first,
have
when
your
it was a
RPG
fan,
scouting
made,
badge? Is that what you're trying to tell
they
us?
They made a chain, you know, the chainmail bags. I got one, but they didn't line it. So I went out, got a felt bag, and I lined it myself. I actually sewed the felt bag into the
flint
inside
D6
it.
And a steel D6. So when he's playing BattleTech, he cannot
Spark.
Just roll dice but start a fire.
Isn't that awesome, though? If you roll a whole bunch of dice that are steel and flint dice, that the just sparks everywhere when you roll that'd be awesome.
And then lights the table on fire.
Then lights the table on fire, yeah. Am I the only one who keeps their dice in their car?
Nope.
No,
mine's in my trunk right now.
Why are you afraid of forgetting your dice?
I do take mine in. I keep
them
next to my computer at home because, again, I have other things in the bag. I can pull out, you know, Zombie Flux and play with my wife at home. Yeah.
Yeah, and you do have other stuff in your bag.
Yeah, and I pull out the bomb game and I play. So I keep it with me. I do, when I go out, I tend to keep it with me in the car as well. But if I'm at home, I keep it with me at home, too.
So would you say...
I basically walk everywhere with my dice bag. I'm a great big nerd.
So would you say, though...
Holy crap, you are.
...that you're going too far one day if you wore a fanny pack with all your gaming stuff in it?
I don't do fanny packs.
I used to do that.
That's my line.
Oh, I knew it.
Big shock.
How can you can't put all the crap you need in a fanny pack. They don't make them big enough.
I mean,
you have to get a backpack.
One day you're wearing a fanny pack. Next thing you know, I'll be in a Snuggie, and that's not going to happen either.
You know what? The day I stopped wearing, and I actually referred to them as hip packs. I did not wear it, you know, facing backwards. I always wore my face in front. Was the day I stopped wearing that was the day.
About
I, no, listen, no, this
pants?
Is actually a true, horribly embarrassing story. Was the day that I wore it when we were out for a commercial shoot, and I had it on there because I was also acting in the spot. I wore it in the commercial shoot, and then when I turned around and watched the completed spot, I looked at it and I said, holy crap, I'm wearing a colostomy bag. And from that day forward, it was off. Done. No more. That style is now out. And no offense to people who wear colostomy bags for a living, but oh my gosh, I looked really bad. Because I think I was still wearing acid wash jeans at the time as well. So.
Nice.
I have a my dice bag is an actual bag. I bought it at a Renaissance fair. It's made of leather, though I like to tell people it's made of buffalo scrotum. It is.
Those pewter dice I mentioned came from a Renaissance
fair
too.
Wow.
And I mean, in all seriousness, too, Pat, I actually do that. They say, "Hey, nice dice bag," and I say, "Yeah, it's made of buffalo scrotum."
How many people have believed
that's
you?
Awesome.
You know what? Most people will, like, right away from the outset, but then they kind of take a look at it, and they're like, no, it's not. I'm like, well, yeah, okay, no, it's not.
You know what? I'm going to contact some of my Native American friends and see if I can get an actual buffalo scrotum bag.
You know what? If somebody offered me one, I'd take it.
They use every part of the buffalo.
That's right.
I'm sure I could get them to make me a buffalo scrotum dice bag.
So with the option of getting off,
I would wear it with pride,
getting authentic knuckle bones for dice. You instead skip over that. So I'd rather have its nut sack.
You know,
I'm carrying the dice.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Hands down. If I could honestly go up to someone and say, this is my dice bag, and it is buffalo scrotum, that would be the best thing ever.
I'm thinking of all the Native American friends I have. I have like maybe two or three. Now they're in like IT and nobody's ever killed a buffalo. When's the last time you've ever met anyone who's killed and skinned a buffalo?
I say I am some very
months ago.
All right, I am some very tiny part Choctaw, as we mentioned on the show.
And you have killed and skinned a buffalo,
but
right?
There are people that I associate with, one guy in particular, who is very Cherokee.
Yeah.
And having lived in New Mexico, I had close contact down there with a lot of Navajo. Never in my life have I had direct access to someone who, in turn, had direct access to buffalo nut sack.
Pat is a go-to guy for buffalo sack.
Well, you know what?
Excellent.
Every other one you kill, statistically, is going to have one. So.
Yeah.
The most unusual die that I have, and I wouldn't say it's one of my favorites, but I have a 16-sided die. I have a D16.
Oh, man,
where's that from?
I don't know where it came from or what game it was from, but I can tell you where I got it. I stole it out of out of my desk. That when I used to work at Windmill Hobbies, which was a hobby distributor back in the early 90s, and I eventually got fired from that job. I was a salesperson.
For what, stealing?
No. I'm not really sure why I was let go, to be quite honest.
Let me clue you in. It was stealing.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't because I didn't steal anything up to that point. I think that they...
You didn't steal anything afterwards because they fired you.
You did not steal anything prior to stealing something and getting fired. Can I connect the dots for you, Chris?
Let's get back to your buffalo ball bag.
Gone. He ain't ever coming back, so I might as well just go ahead and take this thing. It doesn't matter. The company shut down, went out of business 6 months later, and I'm sure it wasn't that missing D16 that did it.
I've never been on fire prior to pouring gasoline on myself and lighting myself on fire. All right, now, Chris, I'm going to say, as someone who designs games for a hobby, one of my biggest pains in the ass is the gap between the D12 and the D20. If you're trying to make a smooth curve of dice, and you can't fill that with two Ds, because a D12, you have a 1 in 12 chance of every side of the die. So if you go up, let's just say, to a D16 to bridge that gap, 2D8 is not mathematically the same as a D16. It's not even
preferable
close
to the player. I'd rather roll 2d8,
depends
obviously.
On the system, but depends yeah. on the system, but maybe. All right, but here's what I would love to see, and they do make them, they're just not common, is you can get d14s, d16s, and d18s. And to explain this to anyone, because there is no single shape or polygon that would create a d14, d16, or d18. What they do is they create dice that look something like a d10 and just add more faces going around the top. So the faces are all the same size, but it's not like what like a D20 would be or something like that. But they do exist. And as a game developer or hobby game developer, I really wish that it was a common part of a gamer's repertoire to have the D4, the D6, the D8, the D10, the D12, and then a D14, D16, D18 before the D20, because that would let me make a much smoother curve between the D12 and D20, which right now I just kind of have to say you can't do. You either use 2D all the way up, so it's always a bell curve roll. So instead of a D6, you use 2D3, I guess, or you find some other way to bridge that gap, or you just stop the dice at D12. Like, for example, in Savage Worlds, if you go over D12, you don't get a D20. You get a D12 plus 1 and then a D12 plus 2. And you know, you just keep adding to the D12 as opposed to actually increasing the die size. So, Chris, even though your life of crime will not pay in the long run, maybe that's the karma of why you've never gotten a Buffalo Scrotum dice bag.
That could be. That could very well be, because I didn't start referring to it until after I had lifted this D16.
The hearth spirits that would cover exactly the kinds of things you would own are greatly outraged by your wicked ways.
I look at it as a merit badge that I earned from having worked at that company for the time that I was there. It was not necessarily the most pleasant experience in the world. Although the customers I served were very nice people. I'll give them
that. The petty larceny badge?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
It's like an Xbox achievement. You stole the D16 and unlocked Great Gamer 25 points. Really? What game are you going to use this in?
You know, the oddest die that I don't have, but I want to get it, and I plan on doing it someday if I can figure out how to do it without it being a horrible mess. I want the rubber 20-sider that is inside a Magic 8-Ball. I want to liberate one of those.
Oh, those things, I have one of those. They're plastic. They're actually two pieces.
Is it really?
It's not a solid thing. It's two pieces.
That sucks.
You think it's going to be cool.
I
busted one open too, or I've had friends who busted them open, and it is an inky black mess.
Yeah, that's what I don't want to really
The thing that
it.
You get out of it is not worth the effort.
I was hoping it would be. It'd be a solid, like a rubber. I know it's like rubber.
No, it's like plastic, and it's like this two halves of a shell.
Like rubber.
Yeah.
The only hope I can give you here. Are you right, Chris?
Well, condom.
I don't know what set him off, but.
I'm sorry. What do you mean, what set me off? You don't really care about the ice. You go, I just like rubber.
I do. It's cool. It comes out of trees. What's not cool about that?
The closest.
You hang a bucket, you know, you can hang a bucket on it. You slit up a tree and it comes, rubber starts pouring out. And maple syrup comes out of trees too. Trees are wonderful things.
Wood.
Pat, I hate to break it to you, but rubber has not been organic since World War II.
Yeah. It's petroleum.
You use, maybe,
to crush a man's dreams.
But what I use.
You.
I get it straight from the plant.
You know, my mom used to have a rubber
real
tree.
Authentic Springfield rubber, huh? When she's frisky, you just go over to the little faucet on the tree.
Yeah. Get a little on it, slap it around. There we go.
Pat, I think the only hope I can give you is there are companies out there that will print custom dice, even single dice or single dies, not like lots of them. If you can figure out or note what each of the facings say, you could put in a custom order and get actual D20.
Honestly, I would have that. The only reason I wouldn't do that is because for me, it would be just the coolness factor if it wasn't just a two-piece of crap like you say it is, that it was actually one that was out of the Magic 8 Ball. Making one on your own is
there's
that
something cool
the,
about
the magic.
Dice that you never intend to use even.
Absolutely.
75% of the ones that I own. Yeah.
I've got the giant, really heavy D6 that I could never roll because it would break the table, but I like having them in my bag.
Yeah. I can't wait to use the custom Fear the Con 3 to.
Oh
my gosh. Oh. Me neither. Those things are
I've
so
said,
sweet.
I need said to make room in my bag much. For that. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about something we can talk about. which is certainly something we've skirted this episode.
Our rating what? Out the door.
Episode... Yeah, keep such thing, Chris.
No, no, don't, because every time I read him, I feel really creepy. Chris, which I guess means you're doing a really good job, but I just feel so... goodness gracious, man, you're making me uncomfortable, and that takes a lot.
Pat, you have a great future in creepy fanfic.
I know.
So, Chris, while you're reading these, what are you wearing?
Oh my gosh, I just realized it's finally happened. Years ago, when this show was still young, we said...
And Chris was already old.
Yeah, when the world was young, Chris was old. But we said we would know this show had finally gone too far when there was slash fanfic about the host. And in this very room, it has happened.
I bet you never thought it would be a host doing it, though.
You son of a bitch. You have brought a curse upon this household.
You know what's really sad? We never made it to 200.
So, who did it? This guy.
The big thanks to all of you that stuck with us through 182 regular episodes, episode zero, 10 interviews, and about 30 bonus episodes. And we want to thank you for sticking with us through this run. Pat at feartheboot.com for the next 2 weeks before we lose the domain. All right. So the other topic we're going to talk about here is something that we did talk about also when this show was young. I believe like episode 3. And Chad and I were talking about this briefly. And we don't think we have anything new to say. So rather than...
I don't even remember what I said.
I do. And I don't think your opinion would change a whole lot. But what's different is we have brought in, obviously, some new hosts.
Some experts.
Episode.
Hey.
Episode 3. And
new guy.
You guys were talking about it and did have some somewhat novel approaches to this. What I would like to hear about is the process that you guys go through with character creation. So, Pat, just to keep you from writing anything else, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
Let's say I tell you we are going to run a certain game, and I tell you a little bit about this setting or setup. You know, we're going to run a game of Star Trek, and you guys are going to be Starfleet officers in the Exploration Division. Mm-hmm. Okay, whatever. You don't have to
Can
go Star Trek.
Can I be captain?
Trek.
I'm never captain. Nobody ever lets me
absolutely.
Be captain.
I've already made you that promise.
Yes!
Can I lead the mutiny?
Yes, a mutiny! I get to put down.
So, but what's your process of creating a character? D&D, Star Trek, whatever example you want to use. What is your process of creating a character?
Well, I was going to say, you hit the first important thing is knowing the system, what you're going to be playing. If I'm not familiar with it already, sitting down with you as the GM and understanding what we're playing.
Like, talk about that. Talk about the importance of that.
Well, like I said, let's take what we're doing right now, the Epic of Rhysos.
Okay.
Never played in it before. Don't really know a whole lot about it. So my process with you at first was to learn about the universe a little bit, what different kinds of options there were. It's pretty open. You can do kind of whatever. But then what I did, and I do this a lot of the times, we'll make my character first. You know, we'll sit down around the table and people start talking about, oh, I want to play this. And, oh, I think I'm going to play this. And I just sort of sit back and listen and watch and see what everybody else is
doing.
You
know, I'm noticing a trend. That's what we've noticed you do here. As we talk about topics here, you kind of do the same thing.
Yeah.
You listen to what we all have to say. And then once your opinion is formulated, you come off like the smart guy.
Well, and what I kind of end up doing in that sense is that if I see a particular area that maybe isn't covered, and it's something that I would like to do. I mean, if it's not really something I want to do, then I wouldn't do that. But I'll say, oh, well, you know what? They don't really have this or this. And maybe I can do something that'll sort of fill that niche. And that's sort of what I will do. Doesn't always work because, like I said, sometimes it would put me into the role of, you know, whatever that I don't want to do.
All right, well, let's talk about it. You gave two distinct concepts there. Let's talk about them each in turn. The first is, let's back up to, you said your first thing you want to have is some familiar with system and setting.
Yes.
Now, system's fairly obvious. It's just so you understand what how the characters represent.
Right,
That's pretty straightforward. But understanding of the setting, why is that important? Is it a concern you would create a character that's too out of place? You didn't realize that elves were treated this way in this setting? And is it that kind of thing? Why is that an important step to you?
Well, yeah, I think what you said is a perfect example. Yeah, I mean, say for example, we're going to play in Tolkien's world, just as an example. Okay. And I would say, oh, you know what? I've heard about these Black Numenoreans. That sounds like cool. It just sounds like a cool name. But everybody else is playing in Hobbits in the Shire. Not really going to fit in because just the fact that you're sort of a bad guy there, whatever else like that. So getting a feel, knowing the setting, or like you said, elves are very, in another one, maybe they're very xenophobic and they don't get along with the rest of the races in the world.
Okay.
But I'm like, oh, I want to play an elf.
So it's understanding what you've
been. Then it's a problem because I hate everybody else and everybody's afraid of me or whatever like that. Now, if that's what I want to play, then that's fine. And then what you could say is you would describe that to me and I say, oh, well, that's kind of cool. I can go that angle. I can, that can be a challenge. That can be a stretch for me as a gamer to try to pull off a character like that, that is, you know, is more of a challenge. But like I said, I want to know that coming in. I don't want to say, okay, I'm playing an elf. I rolled my stats. Here's my character. And then all of a sudden we come to find out, well, this is what you're going to have to do as that character. I'm like, oh, I just wanted to flit around and shoot my bow and play with the wooden animals.
I think I already know the answer to this.
Yeah.
But our current gaming group, who's the alpha striker when we're creating a new group of characters? Because I'm the same way as Pat, where on a second point, which we'll talk about in a second, I tend to wait to hear what everyone else is playing first. But obviously, if everyone in the group was that way, we'd never get the characters made. Yet we get the characters made. Who's the alpha striker?
I am.
That's what I thought. I just want to confirm that.
Okay. I am that in every gaming group I play in, because as soon as I hear just the inklings of, oh, we might be playing this, the gears in my head are already spinning at top speed of, oh my God, I can play this and this, and that would be cool if I could do this and this. Mm-hmm.
You know, I could easily see myself becoming the alpha striker at some point once I have more and more characters down. Because for me, what I always want to do is I want something new. I haven't been gaming long enough to have basically done everything I want to do. So every time I go to create a character, I come in and say, I want this character to be nothing like my last one. Sometimes that doesn't happen. I've been a doctor twice, once a veterinarian, but I come in thinking, I want to do something different. And if someone points out that my character is something like the one previous, I try to get rid of that. But to be honest, I come in with this big, broad notion of, here's the personality I've created. This is what I want to do. I have this idea. And then the entire personality gets refleshed out over the first couple of sessions.
We'll talk about
when I see how it goes.
Hold that thought for 1 second, Wayne, because you're going to be my next target. But Pat, getting back to your second thought of you wait to hear what everyone else is playing, why? Because I do the same thing, but I'm curious if our motivations are the same. Why do you wait to hear what everyone else is playing?
Well, and I think that just in listening to what you guys are saying here sort of made me remember a few things too. And I haven't done this maybe as much with the characters that you guys have seen in recent history, but this goes back in my long history of role-playing with a lot of other groups, too. I don't like to be the leader. I don't want to be the guy that's out in front of the pack, because to me, that puts a target on your head. I like to be that guy that's sort of in the back to the corner. He's in the side of the room, and he watches his situation, looking for opportunities, manipulating it for himself. Maybe he really is sort of pulling the strings, so, but the other people are thinking that they're the ones in charge or whatever.
Really,
so it's an opportunist sort of a
that's character. Really opposite of like how I play, because I never even realized this until Wayne pointed this out to me, and this has been true across multiple groups. I'm never the leader. No one ever lets me be the leader, is kind of the joke, but I'm never the leader. But my characters always take on a leadership role within the game.
So Chad's got a really dominating, quick-moving, boisterous character archetype. And Pat has one that's more quiet, reserved, listens supposed to be. That does not come out on this podcast.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's strange. You play characters that are more idolized in what you really want to be like as opposed to what you really are.
Yeah. For me, I think the waiting for me is a twofold thing. It's one, or maybe threefold. I guess partially when I hear a game idea, typically I have this kind of menu of ideas. You know, it's not per se one thing that catches my fancy. There might be three or four angles I think I could play. And I wait to hear, I guess this goes to number two, which one would mesh best with the group in terms of personality. And number three, I realize that games are not all about this, and some games aren't about this at all. But for me, I do want to know we've got all the bases covered in terms of abilities.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I'm the alpha striker, as you put it. I am totally unconcerned with that. I think that that should not ever even be a consideration when people are making right, characters.
I agree with the caveat, because everyone's going to have a caveat.
Well, you agree with Dan or myself as a kid?
With you, Chad.
Oh, okay.
I come in approaching it, I want the character's personality to fit in with everyone, but I don't worry about the skills and how all of that fits, because I don't mind being set back. I like rolling with the punches if things are going poorly, but there has to be a logical sense to it. If you're the crew of a ship, everyone
and nobody knows how to fly a ship.
Everyone has to have a job on the ship. You wouldn't be on that crew if you didn't have a specialty of some kind. So that's my caveat is if you're in the that type of game where you're
if you're on a five-man crew of a ship that has a five-man crew and there's five players and nobody makes a player who can actually fly the ship and you start out in deep space, there's a logic gap.
But don't you think, and I'm going to turn this to Wayne because I want to keep this on the newer guys here, but don't you think that that same kind of logic could be stretched out to, say, an adventuring party? If you decide to go out and search for gold and kill dragons and nobody in the party is capable of healing, I mean, isn't that the same as having a spaceship nobody can fly?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Chris is a new guy. You have my permission.
Well, no, Wayne, well, go ahead and let Wayne answer
that
point.
That's good. Go ahead, Buffalo Balls.
Oh, that gives me a thought. Hold on.
Sorry.
You know why they call them Buffalo Balls, don't you? So, he likes to skin his humps.
It's because they're spicy.
Because he's from Buffalo?
It's from Silence of the Lambs.
I think that when you try and tailor a adventuring party that doesn't necessarily require you to have every position on that ship filled, okay? If you go kind of with that whole ship analogy, I think that you're doing too much sculpting as players as to this is what our group is, and we've got every base covered, so now we can go out and we can really minimize our chance for failure, which I think takes away an element of excitement. I mean, there certainly is nothing wrong with a balanced party. Okay, two fighters, one thief, a cleric, and a magic user. I don't know. To me, it just comes across as too sculpted. And yeah, I think you're also taking away from possible adventuring opportunities. If no one did fall on the cleric grenade, then there's an adventure right there. You guys just got your asses kicked, and now you've got to go try and get somewhere quick before they catch up to you to finish the job.
If you're playing a game like some spy game where everybody's James Bond, if you're playing a post-nuke game where it's all realistic, there's no psychic or magic or anything like that, or you're playing whatever game, a sci-fi game, you're Star Trek on a ship or whatever, nobody's the cleric there. There's still as much damage flying around. There's still as much danger.
Well,
I mean,
first aid skill. I mean,
there's a difference between applying a bandage to a wound and praying to your god to have the wound seal itself.
Well, my point being, though, there would still be roles.
If you have a party of Shadowrunners and they're all street samurai, then suddenly there's a problem. Then again, it's a problem, but yet it's also fun at the same time because, you know, any kind of combat situation, pretty much going to have things taken care of. But eventually, you're going to run into issues, especially when it comes to other aspects of it.
Yeah, I worry too much if everyone's trying to fill a role, that role becomes their personality and not the personality they wanted to bring to the table.
Separate issue. I completely agree. And this is something we have railed against for years on this show, and I've railed against for years prior to this show, is the role personality parallelism that should not be there. That
if you're a good role player, I understand the concern, but you can't,
it's false dichotomy because you can have a perfectly balanced party and everyone is still role playing an excellent character. It's not as if having a balanced party or covering all the bases with skills, forget D&D, I mean in a post nuke thing, having the tracker versus the sniper versus the scavenger,
any RPG,
it's
with
not like having that balance is going to wreck the party. Now I will agree that if role balancing is your first number one concern out of the gate, depending on the type of game you're running, especially if it's a higher RP game, this could be a bad thing.
I agree with Chris in that my concern is that the party's too sculpted, it's too a little too perfect. Wayne's point there, I see the logic of it. For me personally, it's not much of a concern because if I were to follow that logic out, then any RPG that has an archetype system to it has inherently bad role-playing built into it, and that's not... I don't like archetypes, but for different reasons. I think that they tend to pigeonhole people. I want to play a character that is beyond fighter, healer, rogue, DPS, whatever. Right. But I don't think that the system inherently makes you a bad role-player necessarily.
Let me throw something out here.
I think it can.
Let me throw out something here is in terms of my thinking of the balanced party issue. Okay, let's take Wayne, for instance. Let's say he's not played a whole lot of different characters, and we're going to play, let's just keep it D&D because everybody sort of, it's simple, everybody knows it. Say he decides, you know what, I've never played a paladin. Mm-hmm. I want to play a paladin.
Yeah.
Well, then if everybody else decides to play a paladin too, or maybe people play a paladin.
Oh, are you kidding? That'd be great.
No. Here's the problem. I think what it does is it can take away from Wayne's experience because all of a sudden Wayne's not the pal anymore. He's one of many pals.
That is something that like I have a role. Or
that is something that we do in our current situation
like that, though, where you've got everybody playing a paladin. Then that essentially now everyone is really. I mean, you're literally forced to come up with a definitive personality for your gamer that transcends what your role is in the, as far as the rules are concerned. And I think that's great.
I think what Pat was getting at, if I can put words in his mouth, which is not the first thing to be put in his mouth tonight, is there's a question beyond the question. The question asked was, what's your process of character creation? But the question beyond the question is why? Mm-hmm. And if what Wayne is getting out of a paladin is he's never played the paladin before, he really wants to see what it feels like to be the party's paladin. And that's his motivation for playing the paladin. But everybody in the party is a paladin. Now, I agree with you. That can create a neat situation because now, great, you just put in your group template. You're an order of holy knights. You have to go out and find somebody to... Or
hit the crusades.
Yeah, or whatever.
So you're right. Then it is absolutely the personalities.
That would wreck what Wayne wanted Brother John, from the experience.
It's all about, you know, what are you as Brother John, not what are you as a paladin? If that's what you want to do as an experiment in your group, that's fantastic. If you want to play a party of all paladins, or Jedi is another good example. I want to play the Jedi in the Star Wars campaign, but then all of a sudden we're all playing Jedi. So then it's all like,
here's something that our group does that I find fascinating, because I have never had a group do this since I've been 13 years old, since we've been playing all the different groups I've had. The players will look at what, when we're making characters, like, oh, well, what skill sets are you taking? What role are you fulfilling? What's your thing? Like, my current thing is my guy is the ship's engineer, and he's a college professor, and he writes books, and he has this thing where he works with robots a lot. And then there's also his personality and background stuff. Well, the other guys will look at my character and say, oh, you know what? You're doing the robot thing. I was going to do that. I'm not going to do that now. Not because they want to or didn't want to, but because they don't want to take that away from me.
Yeah, that's something I have a hard time with in some games, is when we get into the point where I don't feel I have a skill that I can bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it hard for you to roleplay when there's nothing that you can be doing in a situation, and you find yourself just kind of sitting there being, you know, overshadowed by either...
Yeah.
It's not just necessarily a stronger personality, because you can throw in personality things, but sometimes you just kind of feel useless if the skill you have, other people are better at it.
And we've been slowly taking away my robots for that reason, because the robots were filling in the role of all the other party members.
So, Wayne, what is your general method? If I approach you and say, we're going to play this game, this general setup, what goes through your head? What's the process?
Well, like Pat, one of the first things I wonder is, what is this world like?
Okay.
I want to know all the different pieces to figure out where I would fit in. I start crafting the story of this character, what I want him to be like, but I mostly craft the personality, and then I think, how would that personality be created? What are the life experiences that would generate the personality I'm looking for?
So you create a front-loaded character versus a back-loaded character. You start, here's who he is today.
And then how did he get
there? How did he get there? As opposed to, if a guy was born in these circumstances and experienced these things, how would he end up?
Right. Because I
think that's pretty typical.
I know early on the personality I want. I mean, I usually don't necessarily stick to it, though. But I know early on, and then I kind of fit the character into that as best I can. And then I also pick what he does based on that. If this is his personality, what kind of jobs would that lead to? That just helps flesh it out.
Chris, what about you?
A lot of times, I'll usually try and come up with a hook of some sort to get me going. Very rarely do I actually sit down and come up with any sort of real semblance of a personality for this person. I usually try and just grasp onto some sort of hook that makes this character interesting.
Give an example of a hook.
I made a female barbarian character whose basic goal was to get revenge against this evil force that had slain her family. Yes, very Conan the Barbarian-ish, but what I decided to do is throw some things in there in her... And I left them pretty vague in my head initially, but there are things in her past that has caused her to have some negative feelings towards men, towards certain groups, and just experience, you know, and things that she's experienced to get to the point where she's at. Then as the play goes on, I'm usually able to kind of build on that personality. So I think in this particular character, I thought, well, all right, so she has definitely been through a lot. She's clearly going to have a lot of confidence to the point where it now has made her rather bullheaded when it comes to negotiation tactics or even combat, where she will foolishly rush into combat, risking her life and limb, and not necessarily pay attention to tactics by those wiser than her. As sessions go and continue, I'm able to put on more and more and more and kind of build this good mental image in my head. And the amount of time that she, or any character that I have, really is able to interact either with the other PCs or with the NPCs, and it kind of gives me a little bit of luxury to kind of really build things up. So it, for me, the character development, it takes a lot longer.
So Chris, now that we know how you make a character to sex with Pat, what do you actually do for a role-playing game?
Oh, for role-playing game.
So, here's a question I want to throw out to everyone here, because this is something I don't think we covered in the original episode on character creation. We've talked about, if you find yourself midway into a role-playing game with a character you don't like, there are tactics you can use to try and fix it. Talk to the GM. See if you can retcon who or what this character is. Kill the character off and replace him. I mean, whatever it takes. There's a whole toolbox of things you can use we've talked about in previous episodes. But now that we're at the point of character creation, I want to ask you guys a question of what do you do during the process of character creation to safeguard yourself as best as you can, I mean, not knowing the future, not realizing how things are going to play out, and Wayne, particularly with you, who has already said, and I think this was recorded, this was not prior to recording, that many times you don't even realize how the personality is actually going to work until the first session when you play it. But how do you ensure, as best as you can, the character you're making is one you're going to enjoy exploring, developing, and playing for fives, tens, dozens, hundreds of sessions to come?
Well, for me, it all goes back to, like I said, what it is I'm playing, what class, what particular skills or whatever that I have to be interested in. And that's why I said, oftentimes I'll wait to see what maybe needs to be there, and I might do that if it's something that I would want to play. If it's not, if I think I don't want to be the healer. I don't want to be this, that, or the other. If I don't think I'm going to enjoy it, then I won't do it. I have to like the role, or I have to find the role that I might be feeling interesting. If I don't, I'm not going
to
do it.
To dust off one of my chestnuts.
I like the sound of that.
You want to put that in a dice bag?
I do.
Everyone sees the world through the fishbowl of their own eyes. Mm-hmm. Every character you create is ultimately, in some way, a mutation of yourself. Oh,
absolutely.
I mean, now, obviously, with your good role player, it's so far removed, it's hard to tell. But nonetheless, it's still you.
Yeah.
Would you suggest, maybe, or are you suggesting, that a way to make sure you like the character is to make sure the character does things that you yourself are interested in?
Yes.
That if you yourself have no interest in botany, don't play a botanist.
Exactly. Yeah, for me, I wouldn't say that is for everyone. Maybe it is, but definitely for me, yes, that holds true. I would have to be doing something that I would find cool to do. It's like, yeah, if I had the time in the world, I would want to do that kind of thing.
True, I'd agree with Pat. Actually, on both points, you know, for me, it's, you know, like I talked about, I key off of a hook that I just create for that character and then build from that point forward. If I'm not satisfied with that initial hook, I have to be before going into this. Otherwise, it just becomes a gray amorphous blob that walks around with the rest of the party until I can figure out exactly what it is I want to do and have with this character. And I don't think I've ever had an experience where I've been dissatisfied with a character later on down the line, you know, because I started off with that initial thing that I liked, and that was it was enough for me to build off of.
Yeah, I'm the same way, Chris. Up to this point, I've been lucky, I guess, or maybe it's because of what I said, that I haven't really had a character where I get into a game and I decide, oh, I hate this character. I just want it to die, or I want to do something. We did have one game where it just the way things went, I didn't like the character, but I still don't. That was also a weird way of making a character too. But so that maybe doesn't
usually
count.
By the time if it comes around where you may end up not liking that character, there have been events that have happened in gameplay that would allow you to make a change if you don't want to go as far as killing the character off or consulting with the DM or GM about, hey, can I change this? The stuff that's happened where you can just internalize that and then go with it and make subtle changes to make that character more appealing to you.
From my standpoint, this is one of the reasons why I'm not the alpha striker, why I sit back and listen to what everyone else is making. Because part of the enjoyment I get out of any character I play, and this is just as true in video games or MMOs as it is in role-playing games, is knowing that I have a place within the party, a meaningful place within the party, whether that's on the level of personality, abilities, or both. And that's why I listen to kind of see what is the gestalt that's forming here. So I know that whatever character I make is going to fit cleanly into the group, is going to maybe have some interesting tension, but not be so far out in left field that it's just the excluded fifth wheel, is going to be useful to everyone, is going to be interesting, is doing things or pursuing things that will line up with where this party is headed.
It's very interesting to hear you say that, because that has never been an issue for me. I guess I've only cared about what the rest of the party is doing in the sense that if we're trying to do something that's grouped and specialized. But otherwise, I mean, for me, it's always been I make the character I want to make, and if his skill set happens to work with the party, great. If it doesn't quite fit, oh well, too bad, I'm playing.
Basically, when I go in to make character, I have hooks. There are a couple of, like, I want to play this. I want to do this with him. Like, in our Epoch of Rhysos game, I came into it, I didn't know what I wanted to play. You were talking about the universe, and then you mentioned transhumanism. I'd been thinking about transhumanism a lot lately, and how it's catching on, and transhumanism is kind of becoming the new cyberpunk. And so I'm like, I want to play a transhumanist. That's something I've not explored. And so I started thinking about, I want to do something different with a train. I just don't want to be weird, right? I just don't want to be more human than human. How about somebody who was a transhumanist and who, for whatever reason, went back and he isn't like that anymore? And then what brought him to that? And as I'm thinking this, I'm making this story, right? I kind of bring him to this point where I make him and transfer the mechanical concepts to a character sheet and start playing him. But I always want to leave room for growth and change. And I've been accused, actually, in our current group several times of my characters don't grow or change within the course of a game. They do, but a lot of it is internal. A lot of that is in my mind and how the character thinks and their thought process.
I've heard you in the past complain about that about your own characters, though, that you wanted it to go down a different path and you feel stuck on the path you're on.
What I do for a lot of characters is I have an end goal. There's something with them or something that I don't like, as an example,
this Guy's a Glass game. You wanted a darker character, and you wanted to redeem that character.
He was evil. He was a very bad person, but even though he was a bad, evil person, he wasn't the bad guy, and he was incredibly loyal to his friends and his family, and I wanted to redeem him. It wasn't working out that way, and it was cool. I loved it. I loved the fact that I wanted him to become a good guy, but the world is so bad, and the things in life that kept hitting him, that he had to be Machiavellian. To be effective, he had to be what he was, which was not a nice person.
It also didn't help that when something bad had to be done, the rest of the party was still kind of in that innocence and didn't step up to do it. And so when somebody had to slit the guy's throat, you stepped up and did it and really put yourself even further down that road, but arguably within the context of the game did what needed to be done.
It was so cool. I love that character because I had this desire for him, this goal, and he wasn't going down that path. And I got into a debate with Dave that I could not disagree with him with. Where he says, if you want him to be good, just have him be good. You control the character. You decide whether or not he's good or bad. And I'm like, you're right. You're absolutely right. But he's still going down a dark path. I'm still playing him in character. And to watch this guy's journey as he grew apart from me, not his own mind or anything crazy like that. I'm not going Blackleaf here or anything. But, you know, I felt like I was watching this guy's life evolve. And I just was sitting there sometimes going, dude, don't make the wrong decision. Don't make the wrong decision. And then I weighed it. It's like he could go A or B. He's going to go B. That's just how life is. And it was cool. It was cool to fail in that regard. But
I think that right there is probably some good advice to end the show on. It's probably the best way to make sure that you are making a character you're going to enjoy. In addition to all the things we suggested way, way, way back in episode 3 or whatever about developing a good personality, developing a good background, making sure the background ties in very organically into the start of the first game. That even if there's seconds of difference there, oftentimes there's a subconscious chasm between what happened 5 minutes ago and round one or whatever. But in addition to that, I think part of making a good character that you know you're going to stick with is knowing yourself. understanding what it is you enjoy about a game, understanding what it is you get out of playing a good character, and then figuring out the steps you need to take to make that happen. And whether that's someone like me who has to sit back and make sure I'm going to be needed, make sure I'm going to fit in, make sure I'm going to have a place in the world, or whether that's somebody like Chad or like Chris, where you've got that hook and you just would really love trying to play the self-loathing recovering drunk that lost his family and then going with that and running forward into the group.
Oh my God, that was my dread character from Fear the Con 2, the alcoholic tennis player who lost his family.
Well, we'll be getting to Fear the Con 3.
I know!
So
he died, but he's coming back! Oh, I can't wait till Fear the Con 3.
Alright, so anyway, there's something to think about as you go to create your characters for whatever next game you play. And in the meantime, have great games, and we will catch you next week.
Later. Yeah.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.